Obsessed with true crime cults or conspiracy theories? Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes is a weekly podcast from Crime House and Pave Studios that dives into the darkest corners of human behavior. Every Wednesday, we uncover the true stories behind the world's most shocking crimes, deadly ideologies, and secret plots. Follow and listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Limits, the inimitable Andrew Limburg handed me a survey during the break there. A survey conducted by the Action Network, okay? And their methodology here was between August 14th and 19th, which was very recently by my calculations, 3,058 NFL fans based in the U.S. were asked this question, and maybe some others. Can you find this survey so we can find some other ones? Limits, just look up survey from the Action Network. But for our purposes, these fans, you know, representing a cross-section of NFL cities, found or voted that Aaron Rodgers is the most annoying player in the NFL, taking 24% of the overall vote. How about that? I don't even think that he should be close. The most annoying players to me, by far, and Travis Kelce apparently finished second on this list. Now I'm having trouble reading this list because I don't know what they're doing. Oh, here's all the different fan bases. They all found Aaron Rodgers the most annoying, most of them. Like 15 of them or so, and the rest, no, like 20. The rest found Travis Kelce most annoying, and we all know why that is, because every time you watch a Chiefs game, there's Travis and Taylor, right? That's why that happened.
Right, yeah, they're just sick of it, and Patrick Mahomes is also on that list, probably because they've done so much winning.
Now, Rodgers, I'm sure for, you know, his takes on McAfee and things like that gets these votes, but when I think of the term annoying, you know who I think of most in the NFL?
Who?
And I respect him, obviously. He's great. Patrick Mahomes. He's annoyingly great in a way, but his propensity for faking or embellishing hits is unbelievably annoying. And just the way that he executes late game drives really irks me, as great as he is. It's one little dink and dunk after another. The Chiefs win. You know, they don't bludgeon people. It's death by a thousand paper cuts. And it's maybe as I watch these Bills-Chiefs games mount over the years in the playoffs, he really becomes especially annoying to me. But I think it's Mahomes. He doesn't even appear here for a lot of these fan bases, although he does ultimately appear on the list. You know who the Steelers fans voted for as the most annoying?
Probably Myles Garrett.
Aaron Rodgers.
What?
Yes. Followed by Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Odell Beckham, and Shador Sanders.
Odell Beckham and Shador. That's funny.
See, that I would agree with you. If you would tell me tomorrow that you would send out this question to every Steelers season ticket holder, Myles Garrett would win by a landslide.
You'd think so.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I 100% think so.
Is he the most annoying player to you?
Yeah, he is.
Anybody else close? Kelce? Kelsey's annoying, though. It's not just because of that. It's because of the way he acts on the field and the sidelines as well.
Right.
Remember when he got in Andy Reid's grill during the Super Bowl?
Yeah,
that
first drive.
Yeah.
Like, Burrow and Chase are annoying just because they're so good. The Ravens are annoying. Players on the Ravens are annoying, like Lamar, just because they're good and they can beat you in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Myles Garrett just annoys the hell out of you for a multitude of reasons.
A multitude of reasons is right. Well, it's Mahomes and him for me. And again, Mahomes' greatness is undeniable, but it's just the whole... Remember we did a whole thing on this last year with the Chiefs, and I wrote a whole story about it. Are they the most reviled team? Definitely since the Patriots, but yeah, maybe ever. Like people, they drive people nuts because of their inevitability. They're always there. Every time you turn on your TV for a big game, there are the Chiefs. They've gone to the AFC title game every year with Mahomes, and it's always the same thing. Him dinking and dunking people to death. And then they go up, you know, with the shots in the press box with the Kelce brothers and Taylor Swift and Mahomes' wife and everybody else. And it's just, it's the same thing. It's the repetition over and over that people, I think, last year just exploded. And it exploded in that Texans game when he embellished those roughing the passer penalties. That's what happened, right?
I really wondered, why do the Houston Texans and Indianapolis Colts find Aaron Rodgers the most annoying?
Yeah, why is that?
I don't get that. The Cleveland Browns, their most annoying is Deshaun Watson.
That I do get.
That's hilarious. Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers. 43% that voted say Aaron Rodgers is the most annoying.
I guess, is there a difference between when I think of the Chiefs, like this was the headline last January, are the Kansas City Chiefs the most hated team in American sports history? Maybe that's a function of social media, where you become more aware of people's feelings real time than you normally would. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I honestly believe that millions of Americans despise the Chiefs. And it's, again, a lot of it's out of respect. People don't like the prom queen either, right? People don't like the prom king. People from outside of Pittsburgh don't like Sidney Crosby. People outside of New England hated Tom Brady. Why? Jealousy is another thing. Jealous of all those people are. I had a couple tweets from people about the Chiefs last year. Nobody is better at snatching the soul and ripping the heart out of their opponent than the Chiefs. I despise them and their inevitability, said Lauren. Lauren Elizabeth was her name. Mike Carpenter tweeted, and this was in the wake of that Texans game last year when everybody was hating on Mahomes. You remember that, Limits?
Of course.
The Phantom roughing the passer, another one where he did this, you know, Vlade Divac acting job, a Joe Nedney acting job. Mike Carpenter, is there a more boring, unlikable dynasty than the Chiefs? I begrudgingly respected the Patriots, he said. What is it about Kansas City that drives me insane? And this was where I landed with this, Limits. They win all the time, right? So they're there all the time. Any team that wins all the time becomes hated. There's no likable dynasty. Never has been, because people are jealous. Obviously, people in their home state love them, but everybody outside gets sick of them and grows to hate them. That's true in all of sports. Hate the Yankees, hated the Penguins, hated the Blackhawks, hated the Canadians in the 70s, hated the 49ers and the Cowboys and the Steelers and everybody else who's ever had a dynasty. That's just going to happen. It's the way that they have won. It's death, like I said, by 1,000 mosquito bites, or gnat bites if you prefer, Limits. They're not fun to watch, I don't think. It's the tomahawk chop and chant, particularly around here, because there's enough people still who have PTSD from Atlanta Braves games of the past, right?
My dad feels that way.
Nobody wants to hear that or watch that. I don't even think the people who do it in Kansas City want to do it. They just feel compelled because everybody else is doing it.
Probably.
I hate that thing.
They give in to the peer pressure.
Don't you hate it?
I do.
And your dad hates it?
My dad does, because of the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. Obviously, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, even though I like Taylor Swift. My daughter's a big fan. She seems like a nice person. But it gets annoying. And then there's the refs, who always seem to favor the Chiefs, don't they, Limits?
Well, I mean, think about that roughing the passer penalty and the penalty against Cincinnati on that
Think
hit,
about the Bills the last year in Kansas City.
Yeah, that was bad.
When Josh Allen had the first down, it always seems to go there. Think about the Super Bowl they won on that ticky-tack holding call on the Eagles. So what else do you see on the Action Network? Does it say most hated team, or do they have other questions on there? What do they got?
Yeah, so there was a most hated team that was put out just about a week ago.
Has to be the Chiefs.
So they did who were the most hated for each individual team.
Yeah.
The Steelers most hated, the Kansas City Chiefs. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can. I just talked for an hour about it. What?
I'm stunned that it's not the Browns or the Ravens.
I'm not. Everybody hates the Chiefs. Tell me more.
There's really no description that's given. It's just a graphic that says how many teams voted for the Chiefs altogether.
What other teams do people hate?
17% of the respondents said the Dallas Cowboys,
yeah,
followed by Kansas City.
Dallas has been hateable since my childhood, when they, you know, arrogantly declared themselves America's team. And make no mistake, the Steelers took note of that. As Joe Green told me, you know, we watched all that stuff. And really, the Steelers became America's team. But it's been, the Cowboys have had a certain arrogance about them for a long time. They earned it, you know, way back when. They certainly haven't earned it in recent decades, have they? Limits?
No.
You're very slow to answer my questions today. What's going on back there?
Well, Andy Lindbergh is back here. There's a food truck, and we were looking at the menu.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to interrupt. You're on a radio show right now. Are you aware of that?
I'm just playing. Cleveland and Baltimore have the Steelers as the team that they most want to see lose.
Hmm. And I think the Steelers are also, going from way back, a team that other people are jealous of. Now, you may say they shouldn't be jealous over the last 8 years, but still, there are some people who are jealous of going to the playoffs a lot.
I think they'd be jealous of 6 Super Bowls in general.
Yeah, just the general success of the franchise. All right. We have Aaron Rodgers on tape as well from what show is it?
It was from Mad Dog Radio with Adam Schein.
What do you got?
All right, this is what Aaron Rodgers said about potentially coming back next season. He's not, at least not fully rolling it out.
Is this really your final year?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'll reassess all that in the end. But, you know, when I signed a one-year contract, you know, there was nothing about in there about playing longer than 1 year. But we'll see how it goes. Obviously, you'd love to have success and be healthy. And, you know, we can start there with health, have some success, and enjoy it. Make a run. It'd be really special, and then we'll figure that out come next February.
Yeah, I never thought when he first said on the Pat McAfee show, it was couched with, I think this is my last ride, stuff like that. And we all know how things change in sports. If he loves it here and he plays well and he feels healthy and they have a nice little run, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he returns next season. Not the least bit. You?
Obsessed with true crime cults or conspiracy theories? Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes is a weekly podcast from Crime House and Pave Studios that dives into the darkest corners of human behavior. Every Wednesday, we uncover the true stories behind the world's most shocking crimes, deadly ideologies, and secret plots. Follow and listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I would be a little bit surprised. I would, just because how adamant he was before the start of the year about assessing his situation. Do I want to retire? Do I want to play? If he's very good, obviously there's a much better chance he comes back. I'm just not as sold that that is much of a definite, especially because I think the Steelers are so intrigued by the possibility of drafting a quarterback next year. I wonder if Aaron would want somebody looking over his shoulder when he's still the starter, but knowing that there's going to be a rookie behind him, likely first-round pick, breathing down his neck for reps.
Meanwhile, speaking of quarterbacks, Will Howard headed to IR. Will Howard became a gigantic story. If you ask me, an outsized story for a sixth-round draft pick. And Cabali, much as we love him, seems to be going wild about this, saying it's a lost season. He said this on the Cabali and Mac podcast. I think Will Howard needs to be fed as much as he can be, even if it's for 4 weeks, up to 7 weeks, whatever it could be on IR. Depending on where they start the clock, it's a lost season. So he's basically saying at some point here, it could be a lost season for Will Howard. He's a sixth round pick. If this were, you know, they drafted Tino Cinceri from Pitt or something, would we be saying the same things? Like, when did we get to Will Howard might be the answer here? I don't get it.
Well, some people have tried to push that Will Howard could possibly be the guy and have compared college stats with Josh Allen. Hi, Pony. Hi. No, I'm talking about Pony, Joe.
Oh.
He's the one that has pushed the Will Howard thing the most of anyone. But I digress. I think a lot of the thoughts around Will Howard significantly overblown just because the Steelers don't have a long-term answer. So, of course, the guy that's not local, but you've seen play a lot, national championship, it gets people fired up that he could actually be the guy to the point where expectations became way too overwhelming for him. You know, we're obviously not going to... Over expectations
for him, overwhelming for him. I
not
don't think
for
so.
Him personally, but just around his name.
Yeah, became overdone. I agree with that, and I'm not saying he couldn't be the guy, but we're gonna react like this to him getting put on 4-week IR. Okay, then what if he doesn't play or he doesn't get activated at all? What was he gonna do anyway? Take a couple snaps in practice, run a scout team now and again. This story is just like they've made a terrible mistake here. Well, what?
I do want to raise one
question,
though.
He's a sixth-round quarterback. Now, sixth-round quarterbacks can make it. Free agent guys can make it. For all I know, he could be the Steelers guy of the future. I don't think this is really putting, you know, a damper on his career, however. Because right now, as we sit here today, it's 4 weeks on IR.
I do wonder if you would go back and ask Roman Wilson, would you rather have been out the entire year or have been on the roster, active, maybe you're not playing in games, but you're the fifth guy and still going through practice reps, what he would have taken?
Of course you take the practice reps. Of course.
So I think that's probably what Cabali is getting at here.
Well,
like,
yeah,
it's
you're talking
just sitting on the sidelines and
sure.
doing nothing.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that doing a little something or not being able to do a little something is going to crush your career,
right?
Or it you know, what is he going to be doing anyway? That's my question. There's two quarterbacks in front of him. I guess he'd run the scout team. I guess that can be helpful, sure. But I just think that the whole Will Howard story was way overblown in this preseason. Again, if it was sixth round pick, Jimny Fenerknanen. Right?
Jimny Fenerknanen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jimny
Fenerknanen. Or Chris Oladokun.
Jimny Fenerknanen from, you know, UConn. Nobody would be thinking twice about this. Right? Now, it's a guy who won a national championship. A lot of guys win national championships who don't make it in the pros.
UConn won the Fenway Bowl this year.
Who aren't even drafted or drafted as low as Howard. And again, he's got some interesting, you know, physical traits. He does. And is clearly a winner. So I don't want to discount him, but come on. He's on IR for 4 weeks, Cabali.
UConn won the Fenway Bowl against North Carolina in the last game that was not coached by Bill Belichick by the Tar Heels.
Wrong. We're going to be talking about all of that tomorrow, by the way, on a Donnie Football Friday. But as I mentioned yesterday when we came on the air, I could not believe that the Savannah Bananas had sold out Friday and Saturday, is it limits? Those two
yes.
nights? At PNC Park.
Yeah.
That they sold out Clemson Stadium. That they're selling out Major League Baseball stadiums. I had no idea. I just didn't. I knew who they were. I've seen a clip here and there on SportsCenter or whatever. I had no idea they were this big.
Listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes now to uncover the world's darkest truths. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm looking at this picture. The Savannah Bananas are coming to town. They've sold out PNC Park consecutive nights. I'm looking at the 11-foot-tall hitter hitting on stilts. How does this person have a strike zone limits? What is the strike zone? Their ankles to where? I mean, this is unbelievable. The whole thing is unbelievable to me. Like I've said a couple times over the last couple days, I had no idea that this was this popular. Are you kidding me? Two straight sellouts, tickets going for hundreds and hundreds of dollars on the secondary market. The Bananas have amassed over 10 million followers on TikTok. They're selling out football and Major League Baseball stadiums. They just played to a sellout at Clemson Stadium. Their YouTube videos have garnered more, I'm reading right out of a Post-Gazette story, by the way, garnered more than 1 billion combined views. I've never seen a game. I've seen some clips. Let me tell you about some things that are happening before we get to a local player who's going to be in these games on Friday and Saturday. Limits, you tell me if you like this rule. You ready?
All right, let's hear it.
Stepping out of the batter's box is a strike and bunting is banned. If a hitter bunts, he's ejected.
I actually kind of like that. Especially stepping out of the batter's box.
Batters can steal first base on any pitch, especially a wild pitch or a pass ball, and there are no walks.
Now, how does that work?
I don't know. We can ask our next guest coming up here. Mound visits not allowed, and here's my favorite one, and this is brilliant because we just had Mark Caballi on yesterday, and he said his kids are just, you know, so excited to see this. What's more exciting than catching a foul ball, right? I'm convinced if you told, you know, 20,000 baseball fans or just people, forget about baseball fans, hey, you can come to the ballpark tomorrow night. We're going to hit bunches of foul balls and you can catch them. $10 each, $20 each. They'd show up. We all love that. This takes it to a new level here.
Oh, a huge new level.
When fans catch a foul ball, it counts as an out. So you're literally part of the game.
Yeah, you are.
And these are, despite all the antics and fun, they're actually competitive games that the Bananas sometimes lose. So the whole thing is completely amazing to me. Let's bring on Ryan Cox from Hopewell. He's the team's shortstop and the all-time leader in trick plays. Ryan, thanks for joining us, man. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Of course. You're on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Yourself and Alex Ziegler, a Butler native, Butler High School grad, and he balances a bat on his face, and among other tricks. How did you get involved with this, and was it already big when you did, Ryan, or has it just taken off recently? You're talking to somebody, maybe this is a good thing, who has no idea what you guys are all about.
So when I got done playing here in Washington with the Wild Things, I had wanted to coach, so I started making baseball content for kids to try to learn online because they're spending a lot of time on their phones or on YouTube. And Jesse saw a video of me doing what is now trick plays and sent me my tryout invite.
Who did
they
that?
Had begun. Jesse Cole.
Who's that?
That's our owner.
Okay.
And so when we first started, they had already done some of these fun antics in Collegiate Summer Bowl in the Coastal Plains League. So they're adding fun stuff into regular baseball. But when I got down there, it was the second or third time that they had started doing banana ball. So being a part of some of the inaugural tours and seeing it grow from minor league stadiums to big league stadiums and, you know, played in some football fields this year has been really incredible.
How big were the crowds, Ryan, when you started? And what do you think the key is to all this? What are people captivated by?
When we first started, it was, you know, the good minor league ballparks, 5,000, 7,000, maybe 10,000. And we worked our way up to 81,000 fans here at Clemson Football Stadium this year, which was insane for one game. But I think the biggest thing that people relate to when you come to the ballpark is being your best inner child. Whether you're a young kid or, you know, you're a parent or grandparent, when you come to the ballpark, you just get to put all the worldly stuff aside and listen to the music and have fun, watch guys perform, watch some tricks on a baseball field you've never seen. I think our outfielders are the most talented people we got, being able to catch a ball doing a backflip and just adding fun to a show where we all love baseball. Now let's put that energy and put that fun into it, and fans really seem to connect with it.
Ryan, I'm curious, with the trick plays, how do you make sure that you perfect your craft, make sure they work to perfection, and what happens if there's an occasion where they don't? How do you try to play it off?
So that's been a learning point, but when I was going through my young baseball career, I had a lot of fun practicing on my own. So after I did the normal reps, you'd always try to add something in for fun. Jack Wilson's my favorite player, and he'd jump and he'd catch that line drive and he'd end up turning backwards, or Brandon Phillips, Brandon Crawford, they do some cool flips. So being able to add basketball into it, which is a lot of the moves I do, dribbling the ball or, you know, going between my legs, has been a real fun challenge. We've got a pretty down pat, but it's just like everything, you make errors. I mean, baseball players make errors. I still think my trick play percentage is you know, definitely over 900 as far as execution. And I think it's a good example for kids to see too. If I do fail, like, you're not putting your head down, you're right into the next play, you're ready for the next pitch, because sometimes when you make that error, you're afraid of the next play. And here I'm just ready to rip the next trick.
So basically, the obvious comparison would be to call you guys the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball, right?
Yes and no. I heard you saying before, our games are, from a baseball standpoint, not scripted. It's very hard to throw 95 wherever you want it or throw a good breaking ball, and it's definitely very hard to hit a home run every time up to the plate. So you see a bunch of guys really competing for the game. We lose sometimes. We win sometimes. Just being able to add a little bit of flair to the normal baseball moves, whether it's a behind-the-back flip on a double play or, like I said, our outfielders doing something crazy, we do add a little bit of the tricks like the Globetrotters, but we're not playing the Generals.
Is the pay good?
Yeah, they're taking care of us. We like to say that, you know, we're getting taken care of just about the same, if not better, than every minor league baseball player. We get to come to all these cities, interact with these fans, being able to just engage in the community. A lot of times you go to a baseball game and you pray that you get an autograph or a foul ball. And here in Banana Land, it's encouraged. You know, we're going to spend probably more time signing and engaging with the fans than we are on the baseball field. And that's really something that I think the kids enjoy, because it gives them hope. When they go home, it's like, oh, you know, 10 bananas signed my baseball. I should probably go outside and work on my game. Or, you know, I got a photo with my favorite player. And a lot of times you don't get that opportunity.
Ryan Cox from a Raccoon Township native and a Hopewell grad. He is the shortstop and all-time leader in trick plays for the Savannah Bananas. And this thing has just taken off to unbelievable proportions, to where they're selling out PNC Park Friday and Saturday night, and tickets are going for crazy amounts of people wanting to get in. This is truly a phenomenon. Limits?
Your nickname, Ryan, is the Glove Magician. I find it fascinating because you're a Pittsburgh native. What it's going to be like for you being able to hear that over the PA system, standing on the field at PNC Park where you grew up going to games?
Yeah, I always imagined being the successor to Jack Wilson. So being able to see this ballpark packed out, have, you know, hundreds of my friends and family and kids that I coached in town to see us play this game. Friday night, I'll have a cool walk out where I'll be able to kind of soak in the moment and play some Pittsburgh music and really kind of take in the crowd for, you know, what feels like 25 years of hard work in baseball for me to get to this point. But honestly, it's just, I think the players that we bring in here, they're some of the best in the world at what they do. And being able to put on a good show for my friends and family in this city means everything.
How do you guys travel, Ryan? And where you stay in nice places? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I flew in a little early. My parents' wedding anniversary was on Sunday, so I got to be home for that. Then ran a couple camps up in the Cranberry-Wexford area. Got to go to Dick's Sporting Goods House of Sport. They got us staying right over the bridge here. We got a beautiful view of the city all around, some good eating. Took my friends up to Mount Washington and the original Primanti brothers, and really just got to dive into the city culture, because everyone I brought up here, Ziggy was here too, but everyone else that we brought up had never been to the city before. So seeing their reaction to the beautiful weather we're having this week and all the cool places to eat, the best view in all of baseball. Like, this is the coolest park that we've been to, especially in my opinion. But just being able to see their reactions to how great this city is one of one.
Now, with more than a billion combined views on YouTube and all the social media and the sellouts, are you starting to become recognized, or could you go to, I don't know, you know, Minneapolis or Boston and walk through a mall completely unrecognized still?
I think I could get away with it. The only thing, I dye my hair every so often, so I'll have a crazy hairstyle. Right now I have the Steelers logo in there.
Yes.
For being at home. So sometimes that tips it off. But our big guys, we got a lot of guys with massive social media following. My best friend Jackson plays second base for us. He has 2 million on TikTok. He gets recognized everywhere he goes. Our third baseman, KJ, he's just out of this world blowing up this year, an incredible human being. He gets recognized. Coach Rack gets recognized. So it's getting to a point where it's becoming pretty cool going through the airport or going to the grocery store. But I did have a really cool moment. I went to golf out in Rolling Acres in Beaver Falls with my high school friend, and I was walking past the putting green, and some guy goes, "Hey, you playing the Savannah Bananas?"
Hmm.
So that was pretty cool being back in my hometown, and some people that I haven't met before had been paying attention to what we're doing.
This has been a really quick rise for the Bananas over the last 4 or 5 years, Ryan. What do you think's next? How far can this thing go?
We like to say we're going to take it to the moon. Jesse is such an inspiration in the way that we go about our business of trying to give fans a great experience. I think as long as we continue to put the fans first, we can take it to wherever we want, whether it's maybe coming back and playing over across the street at the Steelers Stadium next year and then coming back to the Pirates Field, or maybe we'll take it international, who knows. But Jesse definitely has a lot of plans for us, and I'm excited to see what he rolls out next year.
I wonder if we get to the point where you guys get a television contract, that type of thing, and also if you're, and maybe you already do you play other teams who play the game the same way you do, or do they all play it straight?
So we have a 4-team league that all play the same way. Party Animals, Firefighters, and Tailgaters are the three other teams.
Did you say the Party Animals?
Yes, the Party Animals. They like went that on their own headlining tour this year.
I bet
some
they
really
did.
Cool college stadiums, LSU, Mississippi State, to name a few. But all play by the same rules. All are trying to rip trick plays. They have their own walk-ups. We're really, really building the league out. And then next year we'll have two more teams join the league. So we'll have 6 teams total. And the goal is to create this Banana Ball League where we can take our show all over the country. So one weekend, the Bananas may be playing another team in this city. The Party Animals are in this city. The Tailgaters are in this city. And more fans are getting to come to the ballpark than they would before.
Is there a lot of competition? Do they have tryouts every year? Is everybody's job pretty much safe? What's the deal with all that? There got to be people who really want to play.
Yeah, so when I first started, tryouts were a little more open, lot bigger. Now it's a very private invite. We've hosted events in Vanderbilt. We had a tryout down there this year. We had a tryout in Arizona. We may have a tryout in California. So they're putting tryouts out all over the country. Our coaches are going out and scouting, whether it's guys right out of college, guys coming out of indie ball, pro ball. We got some really talented people. The Party Animals have a former first-round draft pick on their team. One of my teammates spent almost a 10-year with the Rockies and their minor league system. You know, you got guys throwing mid to upper 90s. You got guys who can hit balls 450 feet. I mean, really true baseball players that just missed their shot at the big leagues, but have really found a great home here in Banana Ball.
Ryan Cox, Hopewell grad, a couple more minutes with him as we get ready for the Savannah Bananas in front of 2 sold-out crowds at PNC Park Friday and Saturday night. You mentioned true baseball players. Here's my question, and I hope I phrase it the right way here. There are a lot of baseball purists out there. I'm sure people in Major League Baseball take note when you guys sell out their stadiums when sometimes their own teams don't. First, do you have any mixed feelings about playing this kind of baseball? Are you a baseball purist of any kind? And do you hear criticism from baseball purists, Ryan?
Yeah, I would like to say I grew up a very true baseball purist. I mean, we're driving to my tournament and we're listening, you know, to the Pirates game on the radio. My dad through and through, he was there for the We Are Family teams. And we really still in our heart, in our purest, we grew up on baseball traditionalism. So when we come to these parks, we're really respecting the history and the tradition. We've had the opportunity to bring out former MLB guys to come play with us in their cities and watch them get the ovation they deserve for what they did. In a market like Pittsburgh, you're playing 81 games at home. So it's kind of an unfair comparison to say, hey, you know, we sold out these 2 nights and, you know, these guys aren't selling out every game, where, you know, we only have 2 opportunities to be here. So it's a blessing to be able to pack it out. But yeah, baseball purists, especially in the beginning, had a lot to say with, you know, the rules or dancing on the baseball field or doing things that, you know, your coach would tell you to knock off if you were at practice. But in reality, we're all just kids playing the game. Like, this is the best version of the outdoor wiffle ball that we're playing, and we just get to do it in front of a sold-out crowd. So as we continue to go, while we hear the baseball purists, and obviously we want to respect all tradition, we are very happy in our own lane, and we've watched some of those baseball purists hop on board and really after they've seen the show and seen the talent, the work that we put in, have accepted Banana Ball and accepted as a part to help the kids grow the game.
What do you sense Major League Baseball thinks of all this? That you guys are something, at least in small ways, to copy? Do they consider you competition in some way? What about all that?
I know Jesse and them, like, they've had good conversations before. We've had like cool crossover moments. I think our best view is being able to exist in both worlds. We know that the professionalism of Major League Baseball is something that even now in the clubhouse, you know, we're watching baseball every day. We're paying attention to our favorite teams. You know, we're watching this postseason stretch. You know, we care about the All-Star game. You have guys who will go to the Derby and go to the All-Star game and support. So the best thing I think we can be is, in the city of bridges, be a bridge to connect all aspects of baseball, where it's like, yeah, I might love Paul Skeens and the Pirates, but when I go outside and have fun, like I'm practicing being a banana, because at 14 years old, you're not a professional. You know, as much as you want to be Paul Skeens, you still got to fall in love with the game. So I think being a bridge to connect young fans to the sport that we all love is ideal.
Well, we have you mentioned wiffle ball. My friend here, Austin Bechtold, runs his own wiffle ball league. He's a hell of a wiffle ball player. Limits, I wonder if you could get a tryout out of this.
Yes? I'd love to know. We actually played our All-Star game at Wild Things Park this year, Ryan.
That's a cool thing. We had a guy that came in from wiffle ball. And he came in, joined one of the banana ball teams here, and you know, has brought some of the pitching styles and the fun that he found in wiffle ball too here. So, I mean, it's always a possibility. We've had guys come from, you know, pure baseball backgrounds to other sports skills. We got guys who have acrobatic talents. Best thing is just, you know, send that message to them. Look for that tryout invite and just keep posting videos. I think a lot of times you get content seen online and sometimes that'll spark a tryout invite.
Are they looking for a very average athlete that also can double as a broadcaster and can talk pretty well?
There you go. I like that.
You never know around here. We have all walks of the show. We have players that do on-field promotions and microphone stuff, crowd work. Our broadcast team is built of a bunch of guys who bananas. They worked at MLB Network prior. We got some guys from the Big 12 scene. We have a bunch of our announcers really have a character in themselves. So being able to broadcast and come in and pitch, I think you might be able to find a spot.
Unbelievable. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us, and I know people are very fired up to see this weekend, and good luck with everything.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes now to uncover the world's darkest truths. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.